Welcome to In Season. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff, and we explore the farms and gardens of the Lower Columbia Pacific region here. And today, I want to talk about one of my favorite vegetables. I guess it's a vegetable. It's a root. It's a tuber. It's a potato. It's late winter, and a lot of people's thoughts turn to potatoes this time of year. I do potentially have a gentleman showing up to talk potatoes with us today, but he's not quite here yet. But fortunately, our beloved engineer, Kate Brister, comes from a long line of potato growers.
Good morning.
Good morning, Kate. And so she's going to riff on potatoes with me for a little while until possibly our guest shows up, or it's going to be just me and Kate talking potatoes. So what made me think about this was that we're coming up on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, and I keep hearing over and over again a lot of people saying, you got to get your potatoes in the ground by March 18th. And I don't know whether this is an Irish thing because of the potato growing or what a time of year. I'm not sure what it is. I tend to be very suspicious of those kind of absolute dates because the weather is so variable here. And I got to tell you, honestly, I'm not planting potatoes in this ground. It's so cold and so wet, and it just seems like a recipe for disaster. But what are your thoughts, Kate, about timing?
Well, about timing? Yeah. I think a lot of our wonderful sayings like, you know, get your spuds in before St. Patrick's Day come from many, many, many generations ago. And when the seasons and the weather and people were looking at those, things were different.
And possibly in different locations, too. They weren't necessarily saying that in the Pacific Northwest.
No, they weren't. Not on a rainy morning. But it's a good... Those markers, those old familiar markers, are good things to make you start thinking about it. But absolutely, potatoes, as easy and forgiving as they are, do demand a little bit of attention, and planting them in wet, soggy ground is something you just don't want to do.
So I was intrigued to hear, Kate, the background that you have in potatoes. This is clearly something that's near and dear to your heart. Tell us a little bit about why the potato features large in your life.
I've eaten tons of them. And my family is from southern Idaho. And for many generations, they had potato farms in the southern Idaho area in Jefferson County. And so the memories of working on the potato farms with my cousin, we call them spuds there, digging spuds, weeding spuds.
Do you know where the name spud, the word spud, comes from?
No.
I'm just suddenly thinking, why spud?
I don't know. Okay. But until I was pretty old, I thought that was the name for the russet potato. And other things were other potatoes, and this was the spud.
Oh, interesting.
But then the memories of in the fall, you know, in those days too, you would get out for harvest season of school.
Really?
For 2 weeks to help. And so you might get out for the spud harvest for
two
or 3 weeks.
Oh, the days of
child
labor.
Yeah. Actually, I was young enough that it was just days out of school.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
great. But then the field workers would come with, you know, the machinery and whatever they're going to do. And they just these conveyor belts of rolling potatoes. And then you go down into the slicing and sorting places. And those are like under barrack things. They're big, long underground caverns with maybe a roof, sod roof over the top.
Uh-huh.
And you can play on the sod roof on the top. And
wow.
If you go inside, long, long conveyor belt with chopping knives. And
so the chopping the potatoes up.
Chopping the potatoes up, because in sometimes you send them whole. Sometimes you're doing processing.
Uh-huh.
Thing there at the farm.
Wow.
It just depends on what you do. And in the heyday, you could go down and see these long tables with knives going up and down and workers just moving in and out of that. And I was not allowed anywhere near there.
Well, yeah. That's kind of terrifying. It's a little bit larger production than probably most home gardeners do. And probably, I mean, I would say most farmers around here.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a large scale.
Well, and Simplot, the company Simplot, and some of the big potato industries draw from southern Idaho potatoes for their spuds and their sugar beets.
Okay.
And so we're also talking about manufacturing, but on a home scale, my family also grew. You'd think we'd have enough potatoes just out there, but other varieties in the garden.
Yeah.
And one thing I learned was that if you just do a little bit of care, you get so much back.
So what do you think are the key things to know with growing potatoes? I mean, you know, again, it's like we say they're really easy to grow, and yet I know a lot of people have challenges with them. And usually it's like you can identify one or two factors, like you didn't water them enough, or your site wasn't well prepared, or, you know, there were other issues going on. So, I mean, site prep you know, it needs to not be super wet ground.
Right. And
so not a super boggy area.
And not super, super duper rich soil either.
Yeah. They don't like especially fresh manure.
Yeah. They don't do really well with a lot of super duper juicy soil amendments. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's really important with potatoes is just keep the area around them very clean.
Yeah.
And that's, you know.
So like weed-free, clean.
Absolutely.
They don't like a really high pH. And so I know out here we talk a lot about liming our soil to raise our pH because most produce crops, most vegetables and fruits like a higher pH. But potatoes are one of those areas where if you know you want to plant potatoes in an area, that would be an area where you would leave off liming it maybe for a year. And it's okay because the potatoes can handle that and actually prefer a slightly lower pH.
Mm-hmm. And that makes me want something that I'd like you to talk about, Teresa, is that, you know, as a home gardener, we're trying to learn to rotate.
Yeah.
And to not plant the same things in the same soil every time. We know that's really important with tomatoes. It's equally important with potatoes.
Absolutely.
You know, to rotate those things. Would you talk about that a little bit and what harm can come if you just plant the same thing over and over again?
Well, it's one of those things that, I mean, crop rotation comes about from, there's different plant families that, where you have a number of different crops that are in a family. So you have, you know, the family that contains potatoes, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, is the deadly nightshade family. And they're all plants that are similar in some ways. They're very different, clearly, an eggplant very different than a potato. But similar pests and diseases go after those plants. And those are different than the pests and diseases that go after, say, the brassica family, which contains kale and cabbages and Brussels sprouts and stuff like that, which is different than the family that's the cucurbits, melons and cucumbers and things like that, squash plants. And so by rotating your crops, you grow your squash in a bed 1 year, and then you move it to another bed. So if there's diseases or pests that have built up in that soil, when they start to wake up again, if you just plant their favorite food again, they're way more likely to attack it and go after it. But if they wake up and they're like, oh, hey, now I've got potatoes to chew on and I don't like potatoes, I like squash, then they're less likely to do damage to that crop. So that's probably a slightly awkward way of explaining it, but for things especially like potatoes and tomatoes and things like that, that's a family that's very susceptible to disease. To a lot of the soil fungal stuff, verticillium wilt, fusarium wilt, different blights, and those are things that can build up in the soil. And so if you just keep planting your potatoes over and over again in the same soil, those diseases can build up and become way more likely to attack your crops. And this is a lot of what was behind, you know, the Irish potato famine, where people didn't realize this and just kept planting potatoes on potato on potato on potato, and then had some catastrophic crop losses that were had a fundamental effect upon world population and social dynamics in that country. It was terrible. So that's a big reason why we don't just grow. Well, you're advised to not grow things in the same ground year after year, especially for a crop like potato. Mm-hmm. Having said that, it's really hard to get rid of potatoes once you've grown them.
Isn't that the truth?
And it's just, I feel like my intention is good, but you grow potatoes and there's always these little teeny tiny baby
heads that you see when you dig up the
nest. Yeah, and you're like, oh, I'm just going to leave that there because what's it going to do? Well, you know, next year it's going to turn into a huge potato plant, which is great. And you're like, oh, hey, I've got like free potatoes here. But then again, you're growing potatoes year after year. Mm-hmm. So I try to be good about really, really weeding out volunteer potato plants in a plot. If you see them starting to come up, really try to be vigilant and clean that out. It might take a couple of years to de-potato an area once you've grown potatoes in it.
So what would you plant behind that, say a recently de-potatoed area, something that, and you don't want it to be susceptible to the potential soil issues there, what would you plant behind potatoes?
It sort of depends. Sometimes it's opportunistic, like what do I have to rotate into that crop? But another sort of rule of thumb is that potatoes, a lot of those root crops tend to be heavy feeders. They pull a lot of stuff out of the soil, a lot of nutrients out of the soil. And so it's nice to follow crops like that with a lighter feeder or something that's going to add back to the soil. So a legume crop like peas or beans might be good. A lettuce crop, you know, like leafy greens, salad mix, stuff like that. They're not a super heavy feeder. And that can be a way to kind of, you know, add a little bit more nutrient back into the soil, give that soil a rest, let it, you know, build up again before you put another heavy feeder. You know, things like the brassica family, kales and cabbage and stuff like that tend to be heavier feeders. Sometimes it's crops that are in the ground for a long time. You know, they're just in the ground for a long time. You know, they take a long time to reach maturity. And so they're pulling on the nutrients of the soil for a longer period of time. But things like legumes, the beans and peas, those are crops that actually can fix nitrogen from the air. And so they're bringing nitrogen into the soil and fixing it in the soil. So they're a crop that's grown a lot of times to help. They're often grown as a cover crop, something like fava beans. People will plant and grow as what's called a green manure or cover crops. You grow it to a certain point and then chop it up and till it in and let it break down. And that's adding, you know, both nitrogen, but also a lot of organic matter and stuff to your soil as well. So a lot of times if you can alternate and think about those kinds of things, alternate like the heavy feeders with something that's a lighter feeder or something that's going to add more nutrient to the soil. That's a good way of keeping your soil balanced and keeping it healthy. Having said that, it's not always possible. And that's hard. You know, it's tough. And especially if you're trying to grow your container potatoes in a container.
That was what I was going to just ask.
Yeah. You know,
it's a different ball game, isn't it?
It is. And that's a lot of people do grow potatoes in containers, and there's all these different. I mean, if you look out on the internet, there's a lot of different ways you can grow potatoes. The tire one, I have to say, always kind of gives me the willies. I'm sorry. I just like
it's about that, and I've got a thing to say about that.
Well,
I wanted to do it too. I even got tires because it looked so cool.
Yeah.
Number one, the smell of those old tires is horrible, and number two, I read, and I don't know if this is true, so take it with a grain of salt, that those material things, those things in the tire itself,
are leaching into the
soil.
That's the thing that always. Okay, so I should back up and explain what we're talking about. Potatoes are a kind of they're a tuber. They're a root. Their tuber grows underground and they spread. They kind of branch off. The roots grow and these little nodules grow on the roots that turn into a potato. One, and you want to keep burying them, and that helps.
Those have to stay covered.
Yeah. So. And we'll go back and talk about this more. But
yeah,
I'm sorry. Like I'm explaining. It's like I'm using my hands a lot and gesturing, and I realize this is a hard thing to convey on the radio. But you want to keep burying the plants, and then that forces like along the stem where it might otherwise be stem, little knot like roots will form, and those will grow into more potatoes. One way that people have found to grow potatoes in much less space is to do it in kind of like a stacked. Process where you plant your potatoes in a layer, and they start to grow. When the plants are maybe like a foot high, you like if we were doing this in tires, you would put a tire on the ground, fill it with soil, plant your potatoes in that. When the plants get about a foot or so tall, you add another tire and you fill the soil up in that next layer. So you've maybe just got a couple of inches of potato sticking out, and then when they get to be a foot tall again, you add another tire and you fill that with soil. And it just keeps going up. And then all along that area, as you keep burying the plant, instead of it being stem that would form leaves and flowers, it's forming roots. And so conceptually, when you take that apart at the end of the season, when the potato plants start to die back, it's floated with potatoes. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. Timing is everything. You really have to keep burying your potatoes. And you do have to water them. You definitely need to water them regularly for those roots to form. There's a lot of moisture in potatoes. And so if you let the whole thing dry out, that can cause problems for tuber formation.
But that said, potatoes is one of those things that you don't want to have it be wet, sitting wet.
Yeah, it's like, easy to grow potatoes.
It
except
is.
That
except
not
that.
Too wet, not too
not
dry.
Too wet, not too dry. They really cannot sit in wet.
So I have seen other setups where people have either used like a, like a big round either wire cage or like a leaf compost or something like that, and then just rather than like adding a layer each time, just gradually bury the plants as they grow up. I've seen people build something out of like wooden frames that you stack and add. I mean, it definitely is possible. It's a way to do it. I think you just need to experiment with it and pay attention. Make sure that you're burying the plants pretty regularly. And this is what you would do if you're doing them in the garden. They do take up a bit of space because you tend to, if you're doing a bed, you dig sort of a trench and you bury the potatoes maybe a foot down, cover them with a little bit of soil. The plants grow. As they get, you know, about a foot and a half or so tall, you bury them, and then they grow again, you bury them, and you just keep doing that. When they start to flower, depending on how big they are at that point, that's often when I stop hilling them up. It's called hilling them up. And when you, when the plants start to die back is when supposedly potatoes are ready and you can start digging into the hill and harvesting. I usually sneak a few out earlier because I just can't wait. I know. Yeah, it's really hard for me to wait. So I'm like always poking around and going, pulling out these little teeny tiny potatoes going, oh, I really want to eat you. So it's, you and you can do that. I mean,
you can, and you can tell, but when it's the skin texture. Yeah. A lot of times you can tell when they're
ready. Is harvesting potatoes, especially if you grow some of the colorful varieties, like the ones with the red skins or purple or the fingerling ones. Oh, man. Harvesting them is just one of the most exciting and satisfying things. It's a great thing to do with kids because you're just digging through the soil and there's like little
it is like
jewels.
Buried treasure.
Oh, it's so really exciting. Is. Oh, it's just, and then, oh, yeah, I'm getting excited. Okay, I'm like, okay, I have to stop and say, remind you that you're listening to Coast Community Radio at KMU and Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook at 89.5 FM. And we are streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you're just joining us for In Season today, my engineer Kate Brister and I are talking potatoes. It's late winter. We're excited about potatoes. This is a great crop to grow around here. And I definitely want to encourage people to try it. Another thing that I think a lot of people, a question that I get a lot is like, well, can't I just go to the supermarket and buy potatoes there? Even if they're organic potatoes, can't I just grow those? What's the big deal? Why do I need to order them from a certified seed source? And what would be the reasons why?
Because number one, I don't know what the potatoes in the store have been treated with.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're from.
Yeah.
And even if they've got eyes that are sprouting or whatever, I have gone every time to reputable garden sources to get my seed potatoes.
Yeah.
And then I can use my own potatoes to continue if I want to later on. But, you know, you don't want to just take a potato and throw it in the ground. You might you might get something, but you might it might have other things.
Well, and a lot of it has to do with disease. Like certified potato, like people who are selling seed potatoes to be planted in the garden, they're like verified that they're disease free. And so that's a great way to not introduce diseases, potato disease, into your soil if you don't already have them. And that can be a problem. I know there's a lot of people who advise not saving your own potatoes and replanting them because you don't know if they're disease-free or not. Some people have luck with that. Some people don't. Again, I think it's a personal risk thing.
Well, you better know how to recognize the early signs of blight.
Yeah.
You know, just so you can get those things out of there.
Yeah.
If they start to show difficulty.
Yeah.
One thing I love about planting potatoes, particularly with children, is that as you pull it up, and you might want to talk about this, too, about you can get from one plant 2 or 3 pounds of potatoes.
Yeah.
So you really do need to think a little bit about potato yields before you just go in. Because one potato, if you like a seed potato, will have maybe six to eight different eyes.
Yeah, you know, and the eyes are the little...
Each one of those.
Yeah, I think we've all had potatoes that have sat in our kitchen too long and they've started to sprout. And those are called eyes. And each one of those would be like a stem that would come out. That's like a source for new potatoes. That's going to grow underground and go off and like set potatoes on it. So you want to look for those. And I know some people are adamant about cutting their potatoes up beforehand. Some people don't. I think it just...
I've done both.
And it kind of depends. If it's a really large potato, I'll usually cut it. People call that chitting. C-H-I-T-T-I-N-G, chitting your potatoes. And again, do you cut them and then let them air dry for a while?
Oh, yeah.
Do you cut them and plant them right away? I've heard two schools of thought. People feel very passionately about both. I think, again, you could try it cutting them and letting them dry until it kind of almost, not scabs over.
They do. They get kind of a funny... They skin over a little bit on the cut area.
And some people say you should really do that. Some people say it doesn't matter. Some people say plant them whole. I've tried it all different ways, and I don't know that I've noticed any discernible difference between. So I think that's a personal decision, and you can experiment and see what works best for you. Spacing is another key thing. I think it's about like 10, maybe 10 inches apart.
You need to give them plenty of room apart.
I will say I've been experimenting on our farm. We've been taking part in a Oregon State University's Small Farms Program started a dry farming collaborative experiment where it's growing crops without additional irrigation. Without any irrigation, quite frankly. I mean, that's like dry farming is like growing without irrigation. And potatoes are one of the crops that do lend themselves if you have the right kind of soil profile. So you can't really do it in like a sandy soil that doesn't retain moisture. But if you have like a silt loam, especially a silt loam on top of a clay layer, which fortunately we really have on our farm, that really lends itself to dry farming. And potatoes are one of those crops that can do that. And you just need to space the plants much wider. So rather than doing it 10 inches apart in a row, we tend to place them like 18 to 20 inches apart.
That's interesting.
And then they just, you don't water them. They just scavenge for water deep down in the soil.
How do you not water those? I mean, is it hard?
Last year was my first year of participating in this. And there were a few moments where I was like, I really want to water you. Oh my goodness. But they did great and they were beautiful.
Wow.
I mean, you don't get as high a yield with dry farming crops, but the flavor is amazing. It's very intense. They're not as watery because you're not adding a lot of water. So, and I definitely want to talk about,
that's really interesting.
It's fascinating. And I'm trying to line up an interview with the woman who's coordinating this study because it's a really fascinating process. But potatoes are one of those crops. If you have a lot of ground that you can spare, it's a great way to not have to water one of your crops. Mm-hmm. There are some things you got to do, but it's good for that. But spacing is key. I would plant them farther apart rather than super close together because they can compete and it can be, you know, they pull on water and resources and nutrient from each other.
And I think if you're just starting out, if this is your first year to plant potatoes, don't plant a lot of them.
Just try a little bit.
Just plant, take your area that you know you're going to keep clean. You're not going to lime it like your other places or your container. And just plant a few plants and see what you get. You're going to be amazed at the yield. And it'll give you an idea of what your soil and conditions really do.
Yeah.
We've got a caller, Joanne from Klatskanai is calling this morning. Thank you, Joanne, for listening. Now, she says it's not St. Patrick's Day when you plant your potatoes. It's when the dandelions start to bloom. And that makes sense.
Okay, that makes more sense to me.
Because when I read that, I was transported back to southern Idaho. And I was a little girl on the ground again, seeing and smelling those smells and going through those things.
Okay.
And internally,
that
feels right to
me. That makes more sense to me. That definitely makes more sense, Jan. I totally agree. I think it's just, you know, some people just have, there are these traditions that are out there. And people talk about planting their peas on President's Day, too.
Oh,
that
was
another one. And I, you know, it's like if that's the way you do it and it works for you, that's awesome. I think it's great. But what I've found is that a lot of times those traditions either came to us with, you know, European immigrants coming from Europe, bringing those traditions to the New World, or from, you know, people from the East Coast or the Midwest. And we just have a very different growing climate. And so, you know, it can be a great goal, you know, and in a good year, absolutely, it'd be great to have your potatoes in the ground earlier rather than later. But I would say pay attention to your soil conditions. And the weather, if it's really, really cold, if the soil is too wet to work, meaning it's muddy and mucky, if you could pick up a handful of soil and squeeze it and water comes out, it is not the right time to plant potatoes in that soil by any means. And you can do a lot of structural damage to your soil by working it when it's too wet. So I would, you know, this year, hold off. You know, maybe if you really are impatient, cover an area with some kind of a black plastic tarp and let the soil start to dry out and maybe warm up a little bit. But even so, I would definitely pay attention. And waiting is better, I think. Don't wait till July.
But
waiting is a little bit better. But potatoes, so amazing. Such a great crop. I really encourage people to try growing them here because they do lend themselves to our region pretty well.
Do you have favorites?
Oh, man.
I mean, we're not growing. I have to stick up for the russet.
No, the russet.
Which we don't really grow so much
russets,
here.
No. You know, there's a few that I really love. I love yellowfin.
I love yellowfin.
Such a great. It's a little hard to find sometimes.
Potato.
But it's a really good one.
Yukon Gold. I like
Yukon Gold.
Gold.
Yeah. I like this one, the fingerlings. There's one called Russian banana that I've had a lot of luck with. There's another one called rosefin apple that is beautiful and kind of weird, like pinky, nodule-y, but really delicious. Some of the all blue ones, the purple ones, Peruvian purple and all blue, mm-hmm. they're like blue, purple flesh. Those are really good. There's one called Purple Viking, which has a white flesh and then the skin is kind of a purple with like these pink modeling on it. And
ooh.
I will say we grew it. It was very productive. I remember taking it to farmer's market and no one would buy it. They just thought it was too weird looking. Even when I cut one open, I'm like, it's beautiful white flesh inside. No one would buy it. I'm like, more for me. This is great. But it's one of those things where I grow a little bit for us, but I mm-hmm. don't really grow them to sell because for some reason, people don't want to buy them, but they should because it's a delicious potato.
Are you going to try and put a little out this year again?
I'm going to try and put a little bit out this year.
Do
I mean,
it again?
I like to experiment with different ones every year. German Butterball is another little yellow one that I've had a lot of luck with. Maris Piper is an old English heirloom potato that is a good one too. There's a lot out there. And I would just say try the ones that capture your interest and mm-hmm. see how they do. Usually give them a couple of years. If it doesn't do well for you 1 year, don't just give up on it. Try it again. And then if it really doesn't do well, you know, I would let it go. But
And in that, you're talking about specific trains. You're not talking about you won't grow potatoes at all.
No.
I mean, you're going to get something.
You're going to get something. Yeah.
And that's something where potatoes, I mean, if you do anything at all, you will get something.
You will get some potatoes.
Will be worthwhile.
Absolutely. And they're so fantastic to eat. So, yeah. Anyway, potatoes, love them. Thanks for talking with us, Kate, about them. I know, I feel like I want to go home and like make a big thing
too.
Of mashed potatoes.
I am. I'm imagining
roast
mashed potatoes, baked potatoes.
Oh, God. It's going to be a good... And this cold weather really lends itself to
it
that.
It does indeed. And it's a good time of the year with St. Patrick's Day coming up for all those delicious potato dishes. What are coming up on future shows, Teresa?
You know, I've got some... Well, next time we've got a pledge drive. And so we're going to do a sort of an ask your farmer, ask your gardener question thing.
Excellent.
So if you have questions, burning questions about gardening or farming... Shoot, I'm trying to think how you... Well, you could email me, Teresa, T-E-R-E-S-A, at 46northfarm.com mm-hmm. and email me your burning questions. And I will do my best to answer them. And then we've got some more farmers, gardeners. We're going to talk about farmers markets and growing lavender and goat cheese dairy. We're going to visit a goat cheese dairy and some early other fun stuff too. So I'm lining up this year's show schedule and I'm looking forward to this season of In Season. It's going to be good.
It's going to be a great season.